ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
This afternoon, we're reading from the Bhagavad Gita, as it is.
Matra sparshas tu kaunteya sitoshna sukha dukada agama paino nityas tangstitikshas pavartha. O son of Kunti, the non-permanent appearance of happiness and distress and their disappearance in due course are like the appearance and disappearance of winter and summer seasons. They arise from sense perception, O scion of Bharata, and one must learn to tolerate them without being disturbed. Purport. In the proper discharge of duty, one has to learn to tolerate non-permanent appearances and disappearances of happiness and distress. According to Vedic injunction, one has to take his bath early in the morning, even during the month of Magh, which is January, February, and traditionally, well, anywhere, I guess, but in especially northern India, it's very cold. It is very cold at that time, but in spite of that, a man who abides by the religious principles does not hesitate to take his bath. Similarly, a woman does not hesitate to cook in the kitchen in the months of May and June, the hottest part of summer season. One has to execute his duty in spite of climatic inconveniences. Similarly, to fight is the religious principle of the Kshatriyas. And although one has to fight with some friend or relative, one should not deviate from his prescribed duty. One has to follow the prescribed rules and regulations of religious principles in order to rise up to the platform of knowledge. Because by knowledge and devotion only can one liberate himself from the clutches of Maya or illusion. The two different names of address given to Arjuna are also significant. To address him as Kaunteya signifies his great blood relations from his mother's side, and to address him as Bharata signifies his greatness from his father's side. From both sides, he is supposed to have great heritage. A great heritage brings responsibility in the matter of proper discharge of duties. Therefore, he cannot avoid fighting. Matra sparshas tu kaunteya sitoshna sukha dukada agama paino nityas tangstitikshas pavarta. O son of Kunti, the non-permanent appearance of happiness and distress and their disappearance in due course are like the appearance and disappearance of winter and summer seasons. They arise from sense perception, O scion of Bharata, and one must learn to tolerate them without being disturbed. So this is the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. In the first chapter, Arjuna expresses his reticence, his emotional state of mind. He doesn't want to fight. There is a battle about to take place, and Arjuna is one of the five Pandava brothers, and they are supposed to be the emperors of the whole world at that time.
but their kingdom was usurped. They were cheated out of their kingdom. They tried in many ways to rapproach or make a resolution to the differences they had with their relatives, the Kauravas, led by Dhritarashtra and Duryodhana. But in the end, there was no chance of rapprochement. Some altercation, some fight was necessary. Now, of course, today we are repulsed by the thought of violence because there's so much violence going on in the world, and any violence is disturbing to a sensitive person. But, first of all, as long as you live in this material world, there will be violence. You can't stop it. Sometimes people preach a doctrine of nonviolence. That's their underlying principle, ahimsa. But even in the blood, the red corpuscles are fighting with the white corpuscles. Violence is everywhere. Right from, you look in nature, there's so much violence in nature. And all the way up to the human species. Now, one would think that the humans would be more self-controlled, and certainly they should be. But this battle which is about to take place is not for any personal benefit. The Pandavas are pious rulers, pious leaders, pious kings, and they simply want to serve the population, serve their praja by providing good leadership. There is a saying in Bengali that the king is good for the people, and the people are good for the king. You can't have a kingdom unless you have subjects. But of the two, a good king is more important, because if you don't have a good leader, then there's anarchy and everyone suffers. Hence the English expression, a blind uncle is better than no uncle at all. And we see when King Vena, who was a demoniac ruler on this planet, but at least during his reign, there were very few criminals. It was very heavy-handed. A modern-day example is, of course, Saddam Hussein. The Americans are now finding out, okay, they removed the despot, they removed the dictator, they removed the, I guess, Saddam insane. But now Iraq is out of control. There's as much or more violence now that there's no police force, there's no leader. Obviously both are wrong, but it is important to have a good leader. And the Pandavas were such good leaders. They would not only lead people, but they would lead them in a spiritual direction. Because ultimately no one can stay in this material world. Whatever you acquire by your plans, by your endeavors, by your profiteering, by your exploitation, whatever anyone, not you, but anyone acquires, it will be taken away very quickly. You can't hold on to it. Time is indiscriminate. Time conquers over everyone. Mrityu sarva haras chaham kalosmi bharatarshava. Krishna says, time I am, the destroyer of worlds. So time will take away everything, and very quickly. Time goes very quickly. Any of you who are older, you can, and usually they say over 40 is old, but anyway, if you're a little older, then you can realize how fast your life has gone by. Only it seemed like a short time ago you were a youth enjoying without any restriction, without any thought for the future. But now you're starting to feel that the body is breaking down. You got various kinds of problems, heart problems, kidney problems, varicose veins. You're getting bald without joining the Hare Krishna movement. Various problems. So you can't keep anything here. Therefore, a person who can show us, who can lead us and show us a spiritual direction, show us a path, who can be an example, that is the Pandavas. So their fighting was not a bad thing. It was for a higher cause, to bring overall peace and happiness to the population. So, in this verse, a very important principle is explained. The human life, atato brahma jigyasa, chaurasi lak yoni kebad. After going through 8,400,000 species of life, atato, tato means now, is the time for brahma jigyasa, inquiry into our spiritual being, our spiritual self. Not the lower self, the animal self, the body, but the higher self, the spiritual self, the eternal self. Ajo nitya shasvato yam purano nahanyate hanyamane sharire. The soul is aja, it's unborn. Nitya is eternal. So this is more important in our lives than just trying to make the body comfortable. Most people expend their life's energy trying to keep up with status quo or to improve on it materially. And in that endeavor, they're not able to squeeze out any time for spiritual life. It really takes a back seat. Spiritual life is certainly not at the top of the list of people's priorities. So sometimes we need to be cajoled and even pushed in the right direction. Human life is meant for this business. And it's the only solution. You can't solve the myriad different problems. They're unending. It's one after another. Just when you think you've solved this problem, out of the blue, out of the dark, another problem comes which you could not have imagined previously. But due to some karma, due to someone else interacting with you, due to nature, due to the infirmity of your own body, one thing or another, problems just keep coming. So what can we do? How will we prosecute spiritual life when we're perpetually in crisis management mode. Crisis management. That's a big thing. Stress management. It's a big subject today, even in India. I have a group of about 25 devotees. Basically, they're all congregational devotees. They're all professionals. They're all, many of them are gold medalists in their field. They want to preach. And when they go to the temple, it's the brahmacharis and sannyasis who are giving a majority of the lectures. And maybe some senior congregational devotees get a chance to preach. But these devotees, they want to share, they want to preach. They see their Guru Maharaj and they want to follow in his footsteps. So we have formed a group where we are making presentations, the best presentations made using technology, PowerPoint or flash media, various types of software, multimedia projection systems, wireless microphones, etc., etc. We have a marketing department, we have accounts department, and we're creating modules which we're going to present to the corporate sector. And we'll give them, we're training our people how to speak. Choreographing. There's a science to speaking nicely. For example, it's not very attractive if you go before an audience and you just, you know, this lecture is all about Krishna and Krishna is the Supreme Personality. You all fall asleep very quickly. So there's a science to speaking. We're training our devotees to do that. And we have found that the most in-demand module or the most sought-after seminar in big corporates is stress management. Because everybody is feeling stressed out and distressed. They want to know. And they have tried their material formulas. They've tried all of the cliches. You know, your altitude is a function of your attitude. You know, power of positive thinking. You know, if I punch you in the face and you just think positively about it, you won't feel it, your mouth won't bleed, and you know, it doesn't work when you get down to the real facts of life. Just positive thinking when, you know, most of the time there's no thinking, it's very hard. So we want to give them a spiritual perspective. And people are in a crisis mode, so they have no time for spiritual life. Or they think they don't. They don't make it a priority. So how are people going to survive in a world where there is more and more cause for distress and people get more psychologically and emotionally involved in the stressful situations? One of the biggest diseases in this millennium is weakness of mind or mental disorder, mental dysfunction. That was the politically correct. Mental challenge. You can't say someone's crazy anymore. You have to say they're mentally challenged or emotionally challenged or whatever. Whatever it is, people are in distress. But Krishna's saying that these miseries that you're experiencing First of all, they're a reaction to your purva karma. Nothing happens in this world by accident. No such thing as an accident. You can ask any scientist. You know, you can flip a coin and it'll come down maybe heads or maybe tails. You can't really determine at any given time. But if you throw up 500 coins, you can be sure that about half of them will come down heads and half of them will come down tails. So that's one of the principles of probability theory, yes. Probability theory, but an even bigger theory that they talk about governing the universe is quantum mechanics, right. Mr. Einstein was relativity, and he had a big debate with that gentleman in Sweden, I forget his name too, about quantum mechanics, because ultimately you find that there is a lot of, it seems like there's disorder in nature, but when you analyze things, there nothing happens by accident. And in a deeper sense, whatever is happening to us, first of all, it's because of something we've done, and secondly, it is Krishna's arrangement to teach us a lesson. We can learn from everything, every experience we can learn from, we can grow. Here's another cliche, there are no problems, there are only opportunities. Or a better one is, spiritual life means accepting everything that is favorable and rejecting everything that's unfavorable, or accepting everything that helps you to come closer to Krishna and rejecting everything that takes you away from God. So Krishna's saying you just have to learn to tolerate. Tams titikshasva, matra sparshastu kontaya, like the appearance of winter and summer season. They're non-permanent. Now summer is coming. Everyone will enjoy. We may even see the sunshine a few days in Vancouver. But if you wait a few days, it will change. The rain will come. But overall, the summer is a very joyful time. It means vacation. It means picnic. It means canoeing. It means Stanley Park. It means Grouse Mountain. Or no, that's the winter time. All those people do ski in the summer too. But it's non-permanent. It won't stay. Whatever enjoyment you have in the summer, it won't stay. The winter will come. And then icy roads, sand, eroding your car, wind, rain, gloomy days. But don't get distressed, because that'll change. It'll be spring and flowers, still rain, and then summer will come, and then winter will come, and then summer and winter and summer and winter, because that's the way it goes in the material world. Dukkhalayam ashashvatam, a temporary place full of duality, happiness and distress. So how are you going to react to all of this? Every time some misery comes, you're going to get all in a tither. You're going to get all stressed out. My car smashed up, and what am I going to do? The government imposed a new tax, or now people are really stressed because they're paying. It's payback time, as they say. Payback time. SARS, that's the big word now in the media everywhere. SARS, SARS. Right? By the way, if any of you are thinking of traveling to Toronto, you should probably wait for
a few months. Back.
Stay away. Stay away. Have you got any cough or anything? Or do you feel shortness of breath? Or... It's all right. So, you know, people are... It's changing. How many people, 38 or 40 or 50 people have died? And they're really worried. And maybe 100 or 500 people will die. But I can tell you of a much greater disease. It's called old age, disease, and death. And 100% people die. But they're not worried about that. They're worried about premature death from some disease which they can't control. And now we've got a nice one coming along, really wonderful, encephalopathy caused by cows eating cows, or mad cow's disease. Now that's hit Canada. So what's their reaction? They take 500 cows and slaughter them. Are they going to get a reaction for that? Yes. But they won't understand. They won't learn that you just have to tolerate. Srila Prabhupada told us. I remember very distinctly. He said, if he has any trouble, don't take him to the hospital. When someone is old, they're 75, 80 years old, and they have some physical problem, maybe they could go to the hospital and take anesthetic and have tubes in their nose and in their veins and, you know, every hole of the body, some tube and intravenous feeding and oxygen tent and keep them alive for a few more weeks or months. Better they go to Vrindavan, chant Hare Krishna, go to Krishna. You've been to Krishna?
Vrindavan.
Oh, okay. Good. He's a well-traveled man. But if they get SARS in Vrindavan, we'll know where it came from. Good. It's there's so many miseries. And... We just have to learn to tolerate without being disturbed and steady our minds and chant Hare Krishna and pursue spiritual life. Now, I will say that for those of you who are serious about spiritual life, and I'm talking about not just superficial. I'm a Christian, I'm a Hindu, I'm a Muslim, I'm a Jew. I'm an ISKCON member, you know, I'm a card-carrying member. Here's my life membership card, right? I go sometimes on Sundays for the feast, because my wife doesn't like to cook on Sundays anyway. But if you actually want to solve the problems of life, then Rishabhdev recommends to his own sons, who are, you know, he has thousands, hundred sons, and he recommends to them that perform some austerity. If you want to acquire deeper knowledge, then you have to control your mind and senses. Like a horse, breaking a strong horse. When they train a horse, a wild horse, there are many stories, famous stories of very beautiful horses that were wild, and they had to first be captured and trained. So you can take it, your senses are like wild horses. They have to be captured and trained. And in the process of training, it may be considered to be something like austerity. It's not really austerity. We're not being asked to go through the Himalayas and live in a cave and eat only a few grains of rice. We're not being asked to give a lecture in a room where children are screaming. We're... hint, hint. But we're just being asked to come to Mangalarti. Now, today's Sunday. And I think except for Navadvip Prabhu and his family, none of our congregation were there at Mangalarti. And nobody had any work to do. Maybe they were showing the best cartoons Sunday morning and nobody. Prabhupada, my Guru Maharaj, he was a businessman and he was very active in his business at one point in his life. But whenever he would get a chance, he would go and live in the mutt. And he would stay in the mutt, sleep overnight, attend the Mangalarti, and perform his morning sadhana. And he set an example. And not only him, there's so many gentlemen who do it. I know myself, living in Bombay, Krishna Chandra Mafatlal, or Hrishikesh Mafatlal, his name's Krishna Chandra Das, but at one time their family was number three in India. Of course, they broke up due to family feuding, but still, he's doing very well, Krishna Chandra Prabhu. And yet, he comes all the time, not only on the weekend, but whenever he can, with his whole family. His wife is from a Jain background, but she's the nicest devotee in the community, practically. And all their children, they have two wonderful children, and they're all devotees who regularly come for the morning program. So that's a little bit of austerity. You have to get up early, but everyone's heard early to bed, early to rise makes a man healthy, wealthy, and Krishna conscious. So, you know, I can talk about learning to tolerate the miseries of material life, and I may quote a few verses, tell a few stories, and you may be entertained. But the real thing is that you yourself should somehow or other develop a little enthusiasm for practicing the science of Krishna Bhakti, the science of Bhakti Yoga and Brahma Muhurta. These hours in the early morning are the best hours for a very lucid mind, very clear thinking mind, the deepest realizations, insulating yourself from the effects, just like everybody knows that Seattle is a dangerous place. Why is Seattle a dangerous place? Because if there's a nuclear war, there's a big base there in Seattle, naval base, and there may be some missiles aimed at Seattle. Now, they wouldn't get a direct hit on Vancouver, probably. Luckily, we just have a few mountains and a bay and some, you know, whatever, parks, and we're not so strategically important. But Seattle is, and we would get wiped out by the radiation because it travels a long distance. We'd get contaminated by the nuclear fallout. And we're all getting contaminated by the material fallout. Although we're devotees of the Lord, but we're surrounded by stimuli which push us to identify the self with the body. Come, enjoy your tongue. Come, enjoy your genital. Come, enjoy your senses. What's the matter with you? Aren't you normal? This is what everybody's doing. Everybody's going to the movies. Everybody's going to this nightclub. Everybody drinks this kind of beer and smokes this kind of cigarette. What's the matter with you? You don't want to go to a party? You don't want to be with other people, normal people? Why are you so different? After getting this kind of stimuli is the plural form of stimulus, so many. It's radiation, we're getting contaminated. But if we rise early in the morning and practice bhakti yoga, we can be insulated, protected. We'll have on a radioactive suit, you know, invisible suit. And we'll have our Geiger counter and, you know, we'll know where not to go and where to associate. So it would be good for all of those who want to learn how to deal with the distress of the present age to practice a little austerity by attending the programs in the temple. The programs in the temple are not just for a few brahmacharis and a few ashramites. The programs in the temple are for all of you. Now, I can't come every day. My children have to go to school. My husband's going to work. Come on Sunday or on the weekends at least. You have no excuse why you can't come. So please forgive me for speaking so bluntly, but I can't help it. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Are there any questions? Yes.
Accepting the distress and happiness at the mercy of Sri Krishna, doing everything is okay?
Yes, that's, you accept it as the mercy of Krishna and learn. Well, Krishna just doesn't go around saying, ha ha ha, give some misery to that one. Give some misery to that. It's not just like some kind of, you know, pinball player in a one of these. He's doing it to help you so you can learn. Jeev jago, jeev jago. Gora chandra bole. Kota nidra. Jao, maya. He wants you to come back to him. He loves you. Krishna, God, the Supreme Person, he has immense love for all the fallen conditioned souls who represent a tiny fragment of his creation. We are in the super minority. In the spiritual world, there are unlimited souls who never left Krishna's lotus feet. We made a mistake. We can rectify that in our human form of life, but we have to choose to do that. He may give us a little push. We do tend to think of God when we're in distress more. Now, if you get attached to enjoyment, to happiness, then you'll also be attached to the other side of the coin, distress. You won't be able to give it up. So you have to be equanimical, equipoised. In other words, you don't endeavor for profit or loss. Sukha dukhe same kritva. Labha labha jaya jaya. Tato yudhaya yujasa naivam papa mabapsisi. No pap, no sin is incurred by someone who acts in the world equipoised. Sense, equanimical. So he enjoys, but he's not endeavoring. He serves Krishna and he enjoys serving Krishna. He enjoys chanting and dancing at Mangal Arati. See, any other questions? Yes? Someone? Yes?
Well, for those who are
If someone lives a long ways away, then maybe they have some excuse, but the other alternative is that if you have some friends in the temple, or at least once a month, no, let me finish. Maybe I've got it wrong, but even let me finish what's wrong. They can come and stay overnight here. That's what the guest room is for. Or there are devotees here who will put up another devotee in the ashram or in their apartment or whatever. Or one can visit a holy place a few times a year and practice following Mangalarti. But if someone's in his home and is actually getting up early in the morning and worshiping the deity, then that's good. It's good. But on top of that, in association, there are five things which are essential in devotional service. Reading Srimad Bhagavatam, chanting the Maha Mantra, living in a holy place. Fourth one. Worshipping the deities. And fifth one is association with devotees. So it is really important to get that association somehow or other, more than just half an hour or an hour a week or something. That's better than nothing, but I'm just trying to give you a progressive path how you can make further progress. And like I said, it's my duty to push a little bit. I'm not doing it out of envy or any acrimony. I'm doing it out of love. I want to see all of you go back to Godhead in this lifetime. So I push. My spiritual master pushed me. He pushed us. Yes, Mataji, I'm sorry if I got it wrong, but it was a good thing what I said anyway. To have Mangalarti at home. What was that about the temple? Getting assistance or something?
Distance. If someone is living far away,
yeah,
but they get up at 4 o'clock and by 4:30 they get ready and give the
answer. Yeah, I already just spoke about that. I think I answered that, didn't I? I said that's good, but if you go a little farther and at least once a month or whatever. In other words, for you, are you more or less thinking about your own personal situation? Okay. Now, how many times do you come to Sunday feast program? So, you take the trouble. It's an effort. You live far away, but still you take the trouble to come, and that's good. So all I'm saying is, if you, not you, but if anyone took a little extra trouble and tried to come to the Mangalarti, which is very auspicious, that would be nice. But as you say, you are getting up early, 3:30, 4 o'clock, and worshiping your deities in your house. So that's good. It's actually, I would say probably 90%. Well, I don't know. Most people aren't that good. How many people here have Mangalarti in their homes every day? Not even 90%, 100%. Oh, one lady there, two, three. So you're doing very well. But if you could come once or twice for, like Navadvip, is he here? Oh, there's Navadvip. He doesn't live that far away, but he lives outside, maybe 15, 20 minutes drive from here. But he comes on Sundays. Not every Sunday in the morning, but most, right?
Every Sunday, only when he's sick.
Only when he's on his deathbed, then he doesn't come. Anyway, it's not about competition. Everybody has to decide at what speed you want to go. How much is enough? Well, you ask Krishna. You know your heart. You know Krishna. Any other questions? Yes, sir. Oh yeah, eighth canto, chapter 9, verse number 30 and 31, something like that.
A lot of people, they like to focus on the temporariness, and so they don't invest in efforts in material.
No, I have had to really convince myself that it's important for me to take care of my health. Because I hate it, because it takes up a lot of my time, medicine and this and dealing with anemia and so many things. And year after year, I just say, chuck it, you know, let me go. But these two verses in the Bhagavatam describe how the material body is like a tree. The human body, especially, not the material body, the human body is like a tree from which you get the fruit of love of God in the human form. So, without the tree, you can't get the fruit. Therefore, even though it is ostensibly or externally it's material to take care of the body, but without doing that, how can you get the fruit, love of God? So, you know.
I have one other question also about you, which is that with the eating of holy foodstuffs, is it not a substitute for other sense gratification to gorge ourselves in holy foodstuffs?
Yeah. Well, it is. We're taking part in what some people call dovetail yoga. In other words, we have many from our Purva Ashram, our previous life, we have many strong material desires which we want to gradually control. So the tongue is the most voracious and uncontrollable of all the senses. So if one overeats Krishna prasadam, he'll probably get a little sick, especially if he's lusty and overeating. But at the same time, it won't be sinful food per se. It won't give him further karmic reaction. So on the one hand, it may slow down his progress. Yukta hara viharasya yukta chestasya karmasu. I mean, ahara, eating. One who eats too much or eats too little, he can't practice yoga if he eats too much or eats too little also. All right. Thank you very much.